Hey everyone, Patrick here from F This Movie. For the second week in a row, we've had some technical problems with the recording of the podcast. Last week's commentary for Tales of Halloween was plagued with some issues. You might have noticed a change in the sound quality about halfway through. Unfortunately, I've been plagued by the same problems this week, so the show is still totally listenable, but you may notice a change in the sound quality about halfway through. I apologize about that. I've been working hard over the last year or so to improve the quality of the show in terms of the sound, and so it's very frustrating to have weeks like this where forces are conspiring against me to make that impossible. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I'm aware of the problem. Hopefully it's fixed by next week's show. Until then, please enjoy Heather Wixon and I talking about horror. Everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of fthismovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because I am joined once again by my friend, the managing editor of dailydead.com, the horror chick herself, Miss Heather Wixon. How are you, Heather?
I'm good, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Heather was just in town as the host of Flashback Weekend, which we talked about a little bit when Adam Riske was on the show because he recounted the tale of your 31 panel, which people really enjoyed hearing.
Wow. I mean, I heard you guys were doing that. I haven't had a chance to listen yet because I was curious to see how that experience was from the other side, because I can tell you from my side of things, it was completely jaw-dropping and terrifying and horrific. And I just wanted to survive.
And you did. You got through it. And again, nobody holds you accountable at all for the two assholes in the audience.
I mean, I feel bad because I feel like as a moderator, I should have sort of vocalized myself a little bit better. But you're in a position where if I sort of say something snarky to the guy and like it turns into a thing, like even the first guy who asks inappropriate questions as his 4-year-old dances around the stage, you know, as is custom for every horror convention Q&A, I wanted to say something to the guy, but I was like, well, am I going to be a bitch then?
Right.
You know, and I have to, you know, I'm a host. I have to be pleasant and cheerful and try to keep things entertaining, you know, but I also don't want to come off like I'm trying to be a jerk to this guy. But then when he clearly wasn't giving up, I mean, at least Malcolm McDowell kind of stepped up and was, you know, kind of sort of put him in his place a little bit. But that second guy, if he wouldn't have had drunk friends with him, I might have just jumped off the stage and dealt with him. But, you know, when somebody's drunk rambling that they're in the armies or in the army, like I've seen Con Air, I don't really want to get mixed up in any sort of weird military kerfuffle or whatever the hell it is.
But imagine all the colorful characters you'll meet on the airplane.
That's very true. That's very true.
The part of the panel has been posted to YouTube.
Has it really?
Well, it's like somebody from the audience, and it looks like it's just the beginning before it really goes off the rails. I was kind of monitoring it, and I know Adam was too, because we were looking for the asshole who was the one filming it, saying, like, this is going up on YouTube in 5 minutes. But I haven't been able to find his video.
Well, the funny thing is I don't even – they – Flashback doesn't video record all of their panels anymore. I think they used to, and I think, you know, it's a lot of data to keep stored up for years and years and years, so I get it. So I'm sort of sad that in some way this crazy legend of a panel now is, like, lost forever, because at least we all know it happened. But, yeah, I would actually kind of want to watch it just to see how truly horrified my face was.
It's way cooler that it exists only in the memories of the people who were there.
I think so. It's
they can tell the story and embellish. Right. It'll be like the end of the Road Warrior with like the voiceover where people talk about like, I was there.
I was there at the 31 panel at Flashback 2016. Where were you when the world changed forever that fateful Saturday afternoon? Yeah, no, it was just, and for me, it was kind of a big bummer because I kind of was left hanging. Because usually there's Don who runs all the AV stuff at Flashback, and he's amazing, such a sweetheart. You know, he works just as hard as Mike and Mia does that weekend to make sure everything goes off without a hitch. He was, of course, on his one break that he gets all day for 20 minutes during the panel, of course. My co-hosts, I think, were gone as well because they had just done a bunch of panels. You know, there was no security in the room, and I was just kind of like, holy shit, is this my life? This is really happening. You know, because you and I know, previous to that, I technically wasn't even supposed to do the Q&A by myself.
Right.
And I was like, no, I got this, of course. You know, I get hit with the two panels where we have crazy people, and then the panel beforehand, it takes 10 minutes to round up six women to get them on stage. So I have to basically, I have to learn how to sing and dance, I think, at this point, because I'm left up there a lot, very awkwardly, and I don't know how to make small talk with a room of like 800 people, or 500, however many people
right.
it is. You know. So I'm not very good in those situations, but I love it, you know, and it's a fun little memory. And that whole day ended up being capped off by, you know, Scream, which was, honest to God, a dream come true. Even if I had to, you know, I had to do it with the assistance of, you know, Nick and Steve, you know, it still was a really special moment for me, because I never in a million years thought I'd be standing anywhere with, like, you know, three of the main cast members from the Scream franchise. Like, I never would have thought that in a billion years.
That's very, very cool. Very
yes.
cool. Good for you. I was going to say something else about Flashback, but I forgot what it was. So we're basically just going to be kind of talking about all things horror this week on the show between Flashback and I just spent the weekend at the Bruce Campbell Film Festival. So I saw a bunch of horror movies. Halloween, or like October, I guess I should say, is just over a month away, and I can sense people already like getting impatient and starting getting in the Halloween mood. I've already seen people posting pictures on Facebook of like pumpkins and stuff. So October kind of creeps up earlier in the year, it seems like, every year, where people are getting ready. So we're all fully in the horror mindset. So I thought it would be fun to talk about horror movies, but also I believe I have this correct based on your Twitter. You and I haven't actually spoken about this yet, but you are going to Fantastic Fest this year, is that correct?
I am.
That's awesome.
Like, you know, when I started doing this forever and ever ago, it seems like, now actually this week is my ninth year as a horror journalist, and I never, like, the two festivals I always were sort of like the pinnacle for me were Sundance and Fantastic Fest. Two very different reasons. Sundance is good to go because you're kind of at the cusp of all the new stuff for the year, and it's really exciting to kind of, you know, kind of experience those movies and stuff like that. And, you know, being in Park City with all these interesting creative types, it's a really different atmosphere. But Fantastic Fest for me, I'm really, really excited. And I'm also really nervous because I'm very introverted. And I know a lot of that weekend is a lot of revelry and drunken shenanigans and boxing and things of that ilk. And I just have to prepare myself to be a little more social, but I can't wait. Like, I read, there's a movie, I'm blanking on the name of the movie, but like the description is like a Thai village comes under attack by these farting butt munching monsters. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm going to a festival to see this movie, but hell yes, I'm there. But yeah, I can't even believe it. Like, I'm still kind of pinching myself. But I'm really excited. That would be sort of the big three for me this year, you know, being able to do Sundance, South by Southwest, and then getting to kind of close everything out for the year with Fantastic. Like, holy shit, I can't believe this is my life. Really.
It's super awesome. I didn't realize Phantasm Ravager will be showing at...
Yes! With all its big balls of glory.
With all of its big balls of glory. And you can see Phantasm Remastered again, because you haven't seen it enough times already.
I know, and it's funny because, like, you know, I told Brian, I'm like, oh, we're definitely going to have to go see this when it comes out. Now that I've seen it twice. I'm like, yeah, I probably will have a, I mean, no offense. I love Phantasm, but I've watched that movie now a lot this year. And I want to be able to experience it in October. I think that's when it's getting its re-release.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to kind of experience it with that crowd, you know, in sort of that Halloween frame of mind, like you were mentioning, everybody's sort of ready. I honestly would have my house decorated right now if I was allowed to.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, but last year we didn't even get to decorate just because we were so busy with work. So this year, even though I'm actually even busier, I'm making a conscious effort to, like, the minute I get the okay, it's not totally crazy to decorate for Halloween. That shit's going up. So.
I heard a rumor that all five Phantasm films are going to be, like, packaged together on Blu-ray the way that, like, that Halloween box was a couple years ago, because I know the rights are in a few different places for Phantasm.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I'm trying to remember. I think Welgo is the company behind sort
Welgo
of
Welgo has the restoration.
Oh, do they? Yeah, I know that there is supposedly a box set coming. I heard some rumblings during Comic-Con as well, so I would expect to see that. I mean, it would really make the most sense to get that out before Christmas, because that would be an amazing box set, you know, to be able to kind of give to your sort of horror lovers out there.
Right.
I would hope it comes out by then, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know where they're at in terms of getting the other movies transferred to HD or anything like that.
Right. And then I just read today that Dawn of the Dead is now getting, like, a 4K remaster. But from the few details that I read, it looks like it's the European cut that Dario Argento had re-edited, which I don't like as much as Romero's cut. So as much as
I've only ever watched Argento's cut once. I do prefer Romero's version. So it seems a little weird that Romero would be behind that. In particular, I think generally fans love Romero's version more too. I mean, I could be wrong. But yeah, I'm curious as to why they would go in that direction as opposed to just a straight up version I think most of us love.
And maybe it's the report is wrong or whatever. I mean, I was excited when I first saw it because I've never seen Dawn of the Dead theatrically. And it's one of my favorite horror movies, and it's really hard to see theatrically. Like, it's very, very rarely screened legally. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. It's going to be screened. But it sounds like it might not be the my preferred cut. We'll see. I don't know what's going to happen. But
who knows? Maybe it'll sway your opinion.
It may. Or we're just going to start living through an age where, like, all of these movies now get 4K remasters and theatrical re-releases.
Well, speaking of it, it's funny because I actually had an interview yesterday and we were talking about that because the guy I was talking to, we were actually talking about Deadly Spawn, which is, you know, a weird little cult movie that, you know, maybe a handful of horror fans, you know and love, or, you know, I mean, it's gotten a new light, lease on life, you know, with re-releases and stuff, but it's getting a 4K remaster.
I saw that.
And who, like, I mean, I love cult films as much as the next person, and I love the fact that we're preserving them in some sort of fashion. But 4K, really? Like, for a movie that was, I think it was shot on 16mm too. So it's like, what are you possibly hoping to gain? Like, 2K makes sense. 4K for certain things, I'm just like, are we just beating a dead horse now? Like, because I'm just waiting for all of the Halloween movies to come out in 4K, because then we're all going to have to buy them again for, like, the eighth time.
I will not be buying most of them again in 4K.
Well, what if it came out in a box set?
Then I probably would. Yeah, you're right.
See? I mean, it's like a double-edged sword. I'm literally waiting for all the Evil Deads to come out in 4K also, because we haven't bought those enough yet either.
No, well, it's been a little while since...
It's been a year and a half since we've had, to buy the Broomstick Special Explosive Edition.
They screened the first episode of Season 2 of Ash vs. Evil Dead at the Bruce Campbell Fest, and I ended up not going because I wanted to get across the hall and get my seat for the next movie, and also because they showed the same promo for Season 2, and it's a fun promo, but they showed it before every single movie that screened.
Yeah,
so I saw it 15 times over the course of a weekend, so I was so burned out on it. So I still haven't seen the first episode of Season 2, but I know you said it's fun, right?
It is. It's really fun. I mean, for me, Ash vs. Evil Dead was a huge kind of surprise. Like, I mean, it's Bruce Campbell. You kind of know what you're getting into from the start. But the fact that they really did an amazing job of, for as much as this is a showcase for Bruce, it's still a showcase, you know, especially for, like, Dana and for, oh, my gosh, the gentleman who plays Pablo, and I'm totally blanking on his name right now.
I'll find it. You keep talking.
Ray Santiago.
Okay, then.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, the two of them really, they're my favorite part of the show. I love their back and forth, the way that they interact with Ash, the way that they matter to the story just as much as he does. And two, I think, is a really sort of fun continuation of kind of the craziness where everything left off at the end. And you kind of see how that plays out in terms of the stuff that happens with, Lucy Lawless's character. And you kind of see Bruce, you know, sort of having some fun in terms of living out Ash's fantasy life, but then it goes horribly wrong, as, you know, everything does in his life. And it's spectacular. That opening is, I love the opening of the first one, but this one is like 150% better. It's just a lot of fun gore, really fun sort of comedy beats. The lizard, which I'm totally blanking on the lizard's name, but he gets a little moment too. And, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. So, but it's been a big surprise. It's so easily digestible too, because in 30 minutes, there's really no huge commitment. And even if they're not hysterical, they're still a lot of fun.
Yeah, the show took me a while. Like, I thought the first episode was fun, and then for the first half of the season, I was like, I don't know about this. By the end of the season, when they kind of get to, like, the cabin and all that stuff, then it was really clicking into place for me, and I really liked it. I think part of my issue, and based on the promo that I saw 15 times, like, there's some of that in the season, is, like, it's a different version of the Ash character, and so I had to, like, adjust to that very quickly, just like the drinking and being super, like, horny all the time. Like, all that stuff was brand new for the character. So I was trying to,
well, it's definitely more Army of Darkness Bruce than it is,
yeah,
like,
but even in Army of Darkness, he's not like a sleaze, he's like cocky.
Well, yeah, but he's working within the confines of medieval times, you know what I mean? Like, there's no bars that you hang out with
I guess.
Loose women are looking to get picked up. Sorry, loose women. I don't mean to offend you or anything.
No.
Stop. I don't want to offend them. but yeah, I just think within the context of whatever world he's in, it works. I mean, yeah, it was. I thought him sort of, you know, watching Bruce Campbell bang a chick in the season opener of season one was a little like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just, like, it was like an adjustment. Like, I just had to adjust to this version of the character, you know.
It's like walking in on your grandparents having sex or something. You just don't, you know, it's out there and you know it happens, but you don't ever want to think about it, and you certainly don't want to see it. I mean, maybe you do.
Especially because my grandpa is dead, which actually might be fitting. It might be fitting for the show.
Wow. And we just took it right down. All that energy.
All what energy?
So, talking about dead grandparents.
Yes, back to dead grandparents. No.
Dead grandparents, hour of power. I don't know what it is.
What the hell? Was that Utah?
Yeah, he does not like all the dead grandparents talk.
Come on, Utah. No. You made up your own dead parent story. So let's talk about horror movies. I want to talk to you because we still have a few months left in the year, and I feel like it's been a strong year horror-wise. Again, mostly on the independent scene, not as much, at least for me, theatrically. Which is,
well,
to say,
you are a buzzkill.
How am I a buzzkill? Just because I didn't like Don't Blink? No, what the fuck was that movie called? Don't Breathe is good. That's coming out.
Oh, I was like, wait.
No,
a minute.
What's the one? Lights Out. Sorry, Lights Out.
Oh, it's okay. You didn't like The Shallows either?
You know what? I didn't see The Shallows. I'm sorry. By the way, when I say theatrical horror, I missed The Conjuring too. Like, I missed both of those movies.
Wait,
so I'm not trying
what?
To shit talk. I did. I have not seen it.
How is that possible?
Listen, I have a very busy life.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot I was talking to the Patrick Brown.
No. I'm not saying, like, I'm so in demand. I'm saying it was a rough summer for me, just in terms of like having to be a lot of places that were not at the movies. So I didn't get to see a lot of the things that I wanted to get out to see. And The Conjuring 2, it was always like, yeah, I'm going to get to that. And then something would come up and I just wouldn't. So I'm not trying to shit talk all theatrical horror, because obviously there were a handful of good ones that I missed. But from my experiences, you know, again, the independent stuff is a lot stronger. So I'm curious, for you, like, to this point, what is some of your favorite stuff that you've seen this year?
Absolutely Don't Breathe has got to be up there. I mean, holy shit. And now that you've seen it, I mean, we're not saying anything to anybody about anything that happens in that movie. But my advice to anybody who hasn't, you know, who hasn't seen it yet and is planning on seeing it, if you haven't watched a trailer, if you haven't seen anything about it, if you haven't read anything about it, stay that way. Don't, if there's anything that's released in the next few days, ignore it. Go in knowing as little as possible. I want to say go in blind, but that feels like a really bad pun. But it's an easy, you know, it's an easy pun. But really, I think that's a movie that totally benefits from knowing nothing about it and just letting it kind of sneak up on you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I saw like 11 or 12 new movies this weekend and went into every single one of them almost completely blank. Like even Don't Breathe, I never watched a trailer for, because once I knew that I was going to see it, I was like, I don't really want to know anything. Some movies I didn't even know what the premises were of the movie. I kind of knew a title and was like, yeah, okay. And it's cool to be able to sit down and watch a movie that way, to just have zero idea what it's about, where it's going. Don't Breathe, I kind of knew the premise, but I agree, it's a lot of fun if you have seen a trailer. I still haven't watched a trailer, but I know Fede Alvarez has said in a couple different interviews, like, people accused the trailers of giving away too much, and he has said, yeah, but they don't, because once you see the movie, you realize that the trailer does not tell the whole story.
It does not.
Yeah, I thought it was incredibly well made and a lot of fun. Just a really, really good movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, you know, again, it was sort of one of those movies that I saw at South By. I mean, it didn't even have a title until that night. So there was nothing to know. And I can't even tell you, like, you almost felt like you ran a gauntlet after that movie, because you kind of think it's going, you keep thinking it's going in one direction again and again and again. And Fede just consistently subverts that every time. And it honestly, like, it is exhausting. Like, it was fun because I got to watch it for a second time a couple weeks ago. And it was really cool for me to see people who hadn't seen it react to it, because people were very vocal. and it was just, I loved it. Like, it made me giggle just seeing people react. And also, it really, that's why I asked you, you know, if you found yourself caught, you know, kind of casually holding your breath during the movie, because every person that I asked that question, they've all responded with yes. and I love the fact that somehow, you know, in this day and age where we've seen everything, we know everything as horror fans. Like, we're so smart. You can't pull anything past us. We go into things thinking we are, you know, sort of superior to probably whatever we're going to watch, because we know everything. But the fact that a director like that could so quietly, like, take a hold of your senses as a viewer without you even realizing it is genius. And not many films can do that.
Yeah, it's super skillful. And if you can, when this podcast comes out, the movie comes out, I think, this weekend, support it, go see it in a theater, try to see it in a crowded theater, you know, go Friday or Saturday night when a lot of people are at the movies, because this is the kind of movie that I think deserves to be seen with a lot of people. I think it's a lot more fun that way. What have you heard, like, what top critics are saying about the movie?
You're such a jerk.
Heather's quoted in all the ads, everyone. It says top critics are saying, and what's your quote?
Savagely unpredictable.
Savagely unpredictable. Top critics are saying.
I laugh because actually I saw a different one last night on Raw. But it's on Adult Swim a lot, so I see a lot, and it makes me laugh. I mean, at least it's not my name, so at least it doesn't feel as ridiculous. But the fact that it's on, I'm like, it's for, on one hand, it's really cool because, you know, I grew up watching trailers that would be like, you know, in a world where I love voiceover trailers. You know what I mean? We don't get a lot of those anymore. Right. I love trailers, you know, that say things like that. So in the way, it's really cool. But in the way, I'm like, really? Like, there are a lot of websites out there that was very positive about this movie. I'm genuinely grateful that they chose, you know, Savagely Unpredictable, which, you know, was also my nickname in high school. But at the same time, it kind of feels ridiculous. But it's awesome. I mean, it's really cool to see Daily Dead's name, like, on a national campaign. Because when I was in Chicago, the ads were on in Chicago and the same units that are out here in L.A., so it's kind of cool.
And people notice, let me tell you, because this past weekend when I talked to a few people from, let's say, some other prominent horror sites, it would come up that I was there with Daily Dead, and more than one person was like, oh, yeah, you guys just had that placement in the Don't Breathe spot, like, right away. People knew, like, oh, yeah, you guys are quoted in on the Don't Breathe spots.
Ooh, we're going to have to talk about that offline.
Okay.
Later.
You probably really know exactly what I'm referring to, but...
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, on that topic, like, my favorite thing in the world is when I get quoted for an indie movie that, say, nobody's really heard of, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of on the cusp and people are about to discover it. Like, for me, that really means a lot to me because I love those movies. I love being champions of those kind of movies.
Well, your quote was, like, the key quote in most of the promotion for Carnage Park.
It was. And I honest to God, like, when I saw that, like, I had no idea. I think I was traveling somewhere. And Derek Anderson on Daily Dead, like, sent it to me. He's like, you aren't even going to believe this. And I was like, no way. Because a lot of times they'll ask me for quote approval, and I didn't get one on that. So I didn't know. And I was like, for me, like, I think Mickey Keating is one of the most talented filmmakers working out there right now. And the kid never stops. And I love it. And I call him a kid because he's, like, 15 years younger than me because I'm an old lady. But the amount of output that he's had in the last, like, 3 years is ridiculous. And I just think he gets better, you know, each time he's at bat. And I know you were a huge fan of Darling. I know you weren't as in love with Carnage Park as I was. But I really, like, I actually rewatched it on VOD and still had just as much fun with it. So for me, like, something like that, like, I begged, I never heard back from IFC. I wanted a poster so bad. Just because I think that's, like, super freaking cool.
Yeah, that's a cool poster, too. Wasn't your quote predictably savage?
Predictably savage, yes. Yes, I don't like to go too far out of my comfort zone when it comes to quotes.
I've got these two words, and I want to keep working with them.
How do I do this? Savageable predictability? I don't
nice.
Know. That was
yes.
That was my quote for In a Valley of Violence. But no, and that was another one, like, getting two quotes in that trailer. Like, and that movie is, you loved it, right?
Yes, I did.
Oh my God. I freaking love that movie. I cannot wait for it to come out because I'm going to be out there opening weekend just because I thought it was so much fun. But to get a quote that's related to Ethan Hawke and John Travolta, like, the fuck? Like, I really wish I could tell, like, 8-year-old me who, like, sits in a room reading weird books and, like, feeling like she had no place in this world. Like, you know, it's going to take a really long time, but at some point, you know, you're going to be able to be a part of something really cool. And I think for me, just being able to, like, have people recognize Daily Dead, like, I love it. Like, next month is my 3-year anniversary with the site. And what we've all been able to do in 3 years, you know, Derek, Jonathan, and myself, and then bringing you and Scott into the fold, and Tamika and Monty, and I know we have Sean that writes for us sometimes. Like, that to me is so cool because I think, honest to God, like, you know I have to say this because it's our site, but I do feel like we have some of the very best writers for any genre site out there, and I would go head-to-head with any of them. I really do. I believe in all of us, and I think what we have is something pretty special, and just to be able to kind of have that name out there, when I can firmly 1,000% stand and look at our site with pride, like, that's amazing to me. So,
You know what? You know? Top critics agree.
Top critics agree.
Top critics agree with what you're saying.
So I should just get as one of those stupid t-shirts, you know, where it says like, you know, first time director or
yes.
something like that.
Just I'll just say top critic.
Critic, right?
Absolutely, it should.
Yeah, like the girl's Liver Alone shirt at Flashback, which was the greatest thing ever.
That was pretty sweet.
So I'm going to have to make one of those. Just
by the way, we should bring up, because this didn't come up when Adam and I talked about Flashback, and it probably won't do anyone any good listening to this, because I guess you could go to the Flashback Facebook and look at pictures, but they hosted a Freddy Krueger costume contest.
Oh, my God.
And they crowned two winners. Yeah, one was like a female Freddy. And the Freddy that they awarded the winner, you know, the male Freddy, it was a good Freddy costume.
He's a fine Freddy.
But I am outraged that...
Over the not black and white Freddy?
So this guy
Maybe he wasn't as personable, because I know they have to do a shtick when they're up there. I mean, we weren't in the room.
Who fucking cares? Like, just
I know.
Looking at that, he did black and white Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street 5 and was carrying around a life-size paper cutout of the dude, like, who's like the comic book artist, with the giant slash through the side. I mean, if you're familiar with the Dream Child, you know exactly what I'm referring to. It was like the most incredible Freddy cosplay I've ever seen, and the fact that it didn't win is a crime.
Honestly, like, if that room wouldn't have been so full at that moment, we peeked in and saw that guy, I would have walked right up to the stage and hugged that guy. Because holy crap. I mean, they were doing a Freddy and a Fredette winner, so a woman, you know, had to win, you know, so it wasn't like there was going to be possibly two dudes winning. But yeah, I will, you know what I'll do is I'll post a photo on Twitter okay. Because if people don't, there's like 200 photos there. So it's quite a bit of scrolling, but I'll post it tomorrow. And holy shit, like that guy is my hero. I don't know who you are, Black and White Freddy, but you sir, are a god amongst us mere mortals. It was genius. I've never seen that.
It almost made me like Nightmare on Elm Street 5 better. Just because it was
because
so
that guy,
great.
If that guy could be at my house while I watched Dream Child, everything would be all right in the
right?
world.
Yeah, I mean, the Freddy that won was pretty good. Yeah, all right. I'm literally, like, looking at the picture right now because I'm scrolling through it. So
way
I'm
gonna, to be focused.
I'm going to save it, and I'll email it to you so you can tweet it out because, let's face it, you're going to reach a lot more people than I would. So
top critics agree.
That's right.
Okay, we have to retire that. It's so ridiculous.
No, no, no. Come on. It's rare that I get to have top critics on this podcast. So
can I just put it out there, though, when I die, please put top critic Heather Wixon on my headstone.
I will. I promise.
And then you put underneath the quotes, savagely unpredictable.
That's fantastic.
Yes. I mean... That's my will and testament. So,
all right.
Okay. Please,
good thing it's on record now, so I have permission to do that.
And then when Brian's like, "What are you doing?" and you'd be like, "No, I got it. It's on tape."
Listen, she said, "Yeah, let me play it for you." So, besides Don't Breathe, what has got you excited this year? Well, Carnage Park, you mentioned.
Carnage Park was great. I mean, I don't even know if we count Green Room as a horror movie.
I kind of don't. I know it's making a lot of horror-y genre lists.
I mean, it's nice. Our lists on DD, like, we don't have to do strict horror movies, and you know, per se. So right. It's definitely going to be on my favorites list. But yeah, like,
it certainly has some of the most shocking gore of any movie this year.
Oh, dear God. Can I just tell you my most favorite thing that I received this year is I got a pin set from Green Room. And it's the machete and it's Anton Yelchin's arm.
Oh.
And it's a set. Oh. And it's the greatest thing ever. And, you know, considering the circumstances now that kind of surround it, you know, it's really kind of a special thing. But yeah, I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever gotten in my life. I love it. And it's also now made me obsessed with, enamel pins. So thanks Green Room for giving me a new obsession. Like I needed one. So, but yeah, you know, Blair Witch, there's not much we can talk about with that. But you know, we talked about Blair Witch on the podcast-a-thon, which I thought was sort of really weird cosmic timing that like 2 weeks later I'd be sitting at what turned out to be the new Blair Witch.
Right.
And let's just say it's not a new Blair Witch and it's a remake, everybody. I don't even know how the hell anybody got that from the trailers. It is a sequel. It is a direct sequel to the first one. We're just going to go ahead and put a pin in Book of Shadows for now because that's okay.
No, I was going to ask, like, so I don't need to watch Book of Shadows before seeing Blair Witch?
I really don't think so.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, you know, I'll save you, you know, that bullet right there. Mm-hmm. No, it is very, it literally is ties directly into the first one. But I still like, again, I'm kind of pinching myself. I don't know what happened this year to make everything be so badass. But I'm certainly grateful for it because sitting in that theater for that moment, we were all talking about like how big fans we were of that marketing from the original Blair Witch, you know, how much fun it was to go see it that opening weekend. So going into that, not knowing anything, strictly because I just knew that Adam Wingard was making a new movie. I didn't need to know anything else. I didn't watch the trailer. So I, honest to God, like I know certain, you know, members of the press had already seen it. Certain members were sort of speculating about it and then declaring their think pieces as fact when things were confirmed. But that's neither here nor there. I just don't play the first game. It's kind of dumb. I'd rather just, you know, be good instead of having to be first.
Right.
But yeah, to sit in that theater, like I have never in my life wanted to get up out of my seat and start cheering and running laps in the theater than I did when the first opening card of Blair Witch hit. I couldn't believe it. I was so stunned and I felt like such a jerk because, Brian, my other half, is also a really huge Blair Witch fan. He didn't know either. And I guess while I was at the screening, cause I couldn't bring a guest, originally he had a friend who had a pass and he was like, do you want it? And Brian's like, I'm not going to stand in line. I don't care. You know, I'm fine. And then during the movie, his friend texted me. He's like, is the Woods Blair Witch? And Brian's like, what the hell does that mean? And then I get out of the movie and I'm like, oh my God, he is going to hate me. Mm-hmm. So I get into the car and they gave me a t-shirt. I was like, he's like, how was the movie? I'm like, this is how the movie was. It literally slams on the brake, like on like six, I forget what street it was, like right by the mall. He's like, you did not just see a Blair Witch movie. And I was like, I did. And I had no idea. And I love that. Like with that and Cloverfield Lane, like I love that we're bringing back that surprise again. I don't need everything to be ruined for me. I don't need 50 different stills from a movie. I don't need 25 trailers. I don't need 10 exclusive clips. I don't need that shit. Just give me the movie.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, I know marketing departments have got to do what they got to do to make sure the movie makes money, but hats off to certain studios this year taking a risk with going with some really out of the box thinking in terms of the way that they presented their movies, because I will never have an experience like that again. I couldn't even believe it. And it's great. It's a really, really great sequel. And that's all I'm going to say. Like, it just does everything a good sequel should do.
I think I'm seeing it in a few weeks.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm a big Adam Wingard fan. Don't you feel like the way that they did it, the way that they chose to do that marketing, was so smart and made such a difference? Because if they had announced a year ago or 6 months ago or 4 months ago, oh, hey, we're doing a Blair Witch 3.
Oh, my God.
No one would have been excited. Everyone would have just been like, ugh, why? I don't even like the first one. Why do we need another sequel? Blah, blah, blah. But the way that they did it.
I would love if all sequels do this now. Like, don't tell me it's coming. I don't want to know.
Right.
Just 3 months before it's supposed to get released, hit me out of nowhere with a trailer, and there you go.
Right.
Save me a lot of headaches on social media.
The way they did it this way was like, oh, let's go see the Woods. And then all of a sudden it's, oh my God, it's a Blair Witch sequel. And everyone's excited to have a Blair Witch sequel all of a sudden because it is a surprise instead of this weird exercise in like cynical complaining, you know?
Yeah, no, it's really great. And it's kind of fun because I last week I had a chance to do an interview with Simon Barrett for it. And I think we were supposed to talk like 15 minutes and went an hour. So I have a lot of really cool stuff coming from him, but what's really great, and he said this to me towards the end of the interview, We talked for an hour, and not anything in our discussion were related to spoilers about the movie.
That's awesome.
And I didn't know I had, you know, but I just, there's a lot of things. Even he told me one thing that I thought I knew, but I guess I didn't. But that only makes me now want to watch it again so I can kind of go and look for those visual clues. But yeah, that obviously won't be in either piece, but I just thought that was like really fun. He's like, hey, you're the first person not to ask me anything regarding spoilers. And I was like, wow, that's really awesome.
Did you say, well, I'm a top critic.
I'm a top interviewer too.
Maybe here. You've heard from Sony and Screen Gems. I'm a top critic, motherfucker.
Right. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, if you really want to get a sense of what went into making Blair Witch, like that, I don't know if we're going to be doing it this week or next week, but I've got some really good stuff with him. But I just love the fact that, and he in the interview, he shares a story that, you know, he was at VHS2's world premiere at Sundance, January 2013, and he's there with Eduardo Sanchez and Greg Hale, and him and Adam were basically bugging them about making a new Blair Witch. Flash forward less than a month later, he's having a meeting at Lionsgate, and Lionsgate's telling him, yeah, by the way, we have the rights to the Blair Witch project. What do you guys think about that? Like, what a weird coincidence.
Right.
You know, and it's cool. I love the fact that it was those guys that took it on, just because I very much put a lot of trust in Adam Wingard. Again, I was ready to see The Woods without even seeing a trailer. Like, I needed no convincing, just because I really haven't seen much from him that I haven't enjoyed.
Yeah. No, I felt the same way just hearing that he had a new movie coming out. I was like, yeah, whatever it is, I'm on board, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not even like, oh, my God, I can't wait for a Blair Witch. I'm more excited about the new Adam Wingard movie than I am about a new Blair Witch movie. And maybe just because it's been so long since the first one, or maybe it's because I didn't love Book of Shadows. Like, I don't mind another Blair Witch movie, but I'm way more excited about seeing the new Adam Wingard, Simon Barrett movie.
Well, I mean, you know, and I think my headline got a little tweaked beyond what I originally had written for it, but it really was the sequel that I had been wanting ever since seeing the first Blair Witch. Like, you know, everyone's like, well, there is a sequel, duh. I'm like, yeah, I know there's a sequel. I'm not an idiot. But what I meant was, you know, Book of Shadows is its own thing. I'm not going to, I don't remember hating it, but I haven't watched it in a long time. I don't remember loving it either, though. I just remember thinking it felt like a very unusual direction for a Blair Witch movie. And maybe had it not been a Blair Witch movie, I might have been a little more forgive or interested in it, just because I didn't like the way that they sort of did everything with that. But it really does feel like the movie like that I've been waiting for ever since like walking out of the Blair Witch back in 99.
Here's a theory, and I'm with you on Book of Shadows. Like, I don't necessarily love it. My memory is not that I hated it, but not that I loved it. But that movie came out in what, like 2000, 2001?
Yeah, it was. It might have been I think it might have been like the year right after.
Okay, so it might have been 2000, like November-ish of 2000. And I don't think any of us, right, were prepared for that kind of a sequel to Blair Witch. I would argue, like, how do you sequelize Blair Witch? You know, they were kind of up against a wall. I feel like if somebody tried to do a sequel now, in a way similar to what they did with Blair Witch 2, I think it would actually be a lot better received, because I think people would commend them for taking such a different path. Now, again, whether or not the finished movie works is up for debate, and I haven't watched it in a long time like you. So I'm not arguing that like Blair Witch 2 is great, but the fact that they did take a totally different approach and try to do something completely different, I think even in 2000, people were less willing to accept than I think they might be now, because people are so burned out on kind of textbook standard sequels and remakes and reboots. You know what I mean? So now to get something that's a sequel that feels completely different, I think people would be much more willing to accept.
Yeah. I mean, we're horror wasn't really being mass produced out as much as it is now. You know, versus, you know, 15, 16 years ago. I don't know if that makes sense, but there wasn't sort of a mass production philosophy at studios in 2000 where it's very prevalent now. I mean, you know, Jesus, like, I think, I mean, how many movies actually came out this summer that were original or were, you know what I mean? Like 8, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, or based on a property of some sort. Right. You know, so obviously there is a very sort of narrow path that a lot of studios take where, like, it has to either be a sequel based on or based on a property or, you know, a remake. They need that brand recognition for some stupid reason, you know? And for as much as I'm not, we're not going to turn this into this shit on the remakes, you know, talk or anything like that. Cause you know, some of my favorite movies are remakes. But at the same time, you know, if you release 100 movies in a summer and 8 of those are original concepts, like that's a problem. That's a, you know, that's 92% of your, right, your product, basically, that's not original, you know, and that kind of just, you know, it's kind of a bummer when it comes to, you know, when I was a kid, think about all the cool movies you saw, you know, that were original, that had some sort of ingenuity to them or something like that. A lot of kids these days, like, you know, I mean, I didn't see Finding Dory, and I have no problem with Finding Dory existing or anything, but, you know, it's a sequel. You know what I mean? Like, give them something new.
I did see Finding Dory. I did not see The Shallows, but I did see Finding Dory.
Wow. I feel like you're going to have to mail me your horror card.
Well, again,
after this.
I have children, and I could only take
them.
No
excuse. You could take them to The Shallows. It's PG-13.
I could only take them to one ocean-themed movie. And we went
that
Finding
is a terrible
Dory.
Rule. Terrible rule.
Yeah, listen, when they're older, I can take them to The Shallows. Not quite yet, but.
I think Charlie's ready.
He might be. He's getting close. He's not quite ready yet, but he's.
Actually, you know when a good time is like to do the, you know, those kind of movies is when they start getting obsessed with Shark Week.
All right.
Yeah. So start getting obsessed with Shark Week next year. Because he's, what, like 8 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be 9, you know, by then, I think.
Actually, he's only 7 now.
What? Oh, I thought.
No, he'll be 8 in December.
Oh, for some reason, I thought his birthday was last month. I'm an idiot, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm the heartless, terrible friend who doesn't have your children's birthday memorized.
It's a lot to ask. Listen, it's okay.
Do you have the dates saved on your calendar, Patrick?
Right, basically.
Be honest.
I have little pop-up notifications. Oh, shit, my kid was born. what else this year has you excited?
I mean, again, I can't count it as horror, but, you know, In a Valley of Violence is coming out. Yeah. I'm personally excited for 31. You know, I mean, I have a feeling like that's going to be a very polarizing movie, and I'm kind of okay with that because
Rob
what
Zombie
do you
directed it.
Exactly. I mean, seriously, like, if that movie, like, was directed by, like, Shitbag McDuff and stuff, like, then everybody would love that movie. Do you know what I mean?
He was the first AD, right?
He was, yes. Okay. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's Rob Zombie, so it's already going to be polarizing. But, you know, I'm firmly on Team RZ.
As am I.
And I loved it. I thought it was, I mean, it's very Rob Zombie meets, you know, Kubrick. I don't know how to explain it. Not like it's on the level of Kubrick, but half of the movie feels very Kubrickian, you know, and then half of it feels very much like Rob back in his elements, sort of embracing his House of a Thousand Corpses days. And I kind of love that. You know, there's a lot of that movie that's very unapologetic. It is not what I would call a very forgiving violence. I don't know if it's quite savagely unpredictable. Actually, that's our t-shirt we should get for Flashback next year. Is we should all, you, me, and Risky, we should get Savagely Unpredictable shirts.
I'm in.
All right, putting that out there. Team Savagely Unpredictable.
Can there also be a Wishmaster quote on there?
As you wish. Hashtag as you wish on the back. I still can't believe he didn't buy that ring.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, I just had a really fun time with it. Like, I loved getting to see Meg Foster be a total badass. And I think I just realized we haven't talked since we did our best of 2015 because We haven't talked about any of these movies, I just realized. And that was at Sundance in January for me. So I've been sort of sitting on this one for a while now.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I love about Meg Foster is she is such a unique person. In the fact that she's always on a plane.
Translation, space cadet.
She is, but she's on this plane where I almost feel like her eyes are so hypnotic. Like she's seeing things like we are not seeing in the room. Like it's like a cat. I don't know how to explain it. But like I feel like she is just working on a level, you know, that is just above all of us. And but I love her about that. And she's the sweetest woman ever. And I wish she had had a bigger career. And I love the fact that, you know, and this is something I think you and I have talked about before, you know, there's always the tendency for a lot of indie horror movies to sort of cast a lot of these, you know, older veteran actors in the genre simply because their name on a box is going to sell them a territory or whatever, or just...
Or it gives them some sort of cachet with horror fans, you know?
Exactly. You know, and that's fine. That's, you know, I'm not going to bash you. Everybody has to, you want to make a movie, you want it to sell. I get it. I'm not against that. But what I love about Rob is the fact that he uses these actors in a way that showcases them. You know what I mean? Like, honest to God, like, you know, and I love Bill Moseley and I think he's brilliant, but would as many of us still be talking about him as much now had Rob not given him the opportunity to give us two very different versions of the same character?
Yeah.
And both are uniquely brilliant. I mean, obviously Devil's Rejects is just stunning. And had that not been a horror movie, that would have been an Oscar-contending role, I think. Had it not been in, you know, a quote-unquote B movie, you know, according to...
Directed by a musician.
Oh, of course. Pish posh. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying is that those movies remade Bill Moseley's career because he really gets to dive in. I mean, just Devil's Rejects. I will go... mano a mano with anybody who tries to tell me that movie isn't great. Because I can tell you 105 different reasons why I love that movie. And, you know, it's still, it's up there with, you know, Lords of Salem's I love for totally different reasons. But I, probably out of all Rob's movies, I rewatch Devil's Rejects the most. And it still is unsettling. It's still hard to watch. Jeffrey, you know, seeing Jeffrey Lewis in there. I mean, again, using actors for the right reasons, not because it's going to sell Devil's Rejects. You know what I mean? Jeffrey Lewis wasn't going to be selling, you know, seats to, you know.
Right.
A majorly released studio movie in 2005.
No, the movie is savagely unpredictable. I recently rewatched House of a Thousand Corpses a week or two ago and was thinking about sitting down. I went to like a weekday matinee with my wife and neither of us had any idea really what we were in for. You know, I didn't really listen to White Zombie. I had seen the trailer back in 1999, but that was 2 or 3 years before the movie finally came out. I remember seeing the trailer before the remake of House on Haunted Hill and being like, what? And then 3 years go by and then the movie comes out. So we sit down and it already looks and feels unlike, you know, any other horror movie being made at the time. And Sid Haig comes out. And when I saw the movie in like 2002 or whatever, I wasn't really aware of Sid Haig. He hadn't worked in a long time. At that point, I hadn't seen, you know, a bunch of Jack Hill's old movies and some of those exploitation movies he did in the 60s and 70s. So he was kind of an unknown commodity to me. And in that opening scene, it's just like, where did they find this terrifying guy in the clown makeup who I'm not even sure is an actor? Like, he just seems like a crazy guy that they just found and put in this movie. It made him so much scarier, kind of not knowing that he's Sid Haig and he's this actor and he has this history as kind of the star of these cult movies, you know, that he carried that baggage with him. I just was like, who the fuck is this and why is he so scary? And it made the movie that much more powerful back, you know, at the time that I saw it.
Yeah, I have such fond memories of seeing House of Thousand Corpses for the first time in theaters, because it's literally the reason one of my closest friends at the time ended up on anxiety medication pretty much. I'm guessing she's still on it. We don't keep in touch, but I'm not even joking. We went to go see it, and this is, you know, it's myself, my ex, my girlfriend Julie, and my cousin Amber, who is like 6 months, 7 months pregnant. So you'd think the pregnant woman would be the one freaking out. But Julie made it about 25 minutes into the movie and had to leave because she had a panic attack.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anybody react to a movie like that. But honest to God, she ended up having to go and be put on anxiety medication. And even worse, because I think it came out – did it come out before Cabin Fever or after Cabin Fever?
I think before.
I'm pretty sure it was before because I think we then tried to go to Cabin Fever and that totally set her off too. So then I realized like she is not the person to go to horror movies with. I didn't leave, by the way, between either movie. I'll just put that out there because I'm good. A horrible, terrible person.
Nah, you're a good horror fan.
No, I mean, my cousin had her. It was fine. She was good. She, you know, they got home. I wasn't going to leave a Rob Zombie movie. I'd wait. Like you said, I think I saw the trailer at Ozfest 2000, 2001, maybe. I don't even remember. Because I think that was 2003 it came out, right? If I'm not mistaken. Or is it 2002?
I don't know. One of those.
One of those.
I can look it up.
But yeah, I just, 2003 is when it came out.
All right. Then.
But yeah, so I loved it. I mean, I know it's his sort of remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, whatever. I don't care. It was utterly like it immediately crept under your skin. And the thing is, the first time I saw it, I actually didn't even really like it that much. One, I think it was just like having to deal with a friend getting kind of I felt like my senses were assaulted and I knew I wanted to watch it again, but I couldn't explain why because I didn't find it to be a pleasant experience. It was very terrifying. But then it was like, I remember renting it like the year later for Halloween. Like we rented a bunch of movies. And so that was one of them. I was like, all right, I'm going to give this another chance. And I don't know, like something with it clicked. I immediately clicked so much better with it the second time around. And I quickly became like, I watched that movie a lot. Like when it came out on DVD, it has one of the best DVD menus ever,
which they did not. So I bought it on Blu-ray and unbeknownst to me then like sold off the DVD. Cause I was like, well, I don't need to keep this. And that,
never do that.
Not man. Carried over that crazy menu. So I'm all upset.
Yeah. If there's one little aspect of a DVD that might be kind of special, I don't. I mean, I have like the Halloween, like the TV version on DVD. I've got like three different Halloween DVDs, but I'm not getting rid of them even though I have like five Blu-rays now or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, because they all have like little unique things. So never, never do that.
All right.
I know we had that discussion because you sold your Salem's Lot DVD once too.
I did, and then bought it back, and now it's coming out on Blu-ray, so.
Yay!
Yay!
But yeah, I mean, you know, and I, House of a Thousand Corpses is a good Halloween night movie to watch, I think, just because of how he sort of frames everything on Halloween. Like, it just kind of takes me right into that mood. But yeah, I don't know. I wish people didn't give him shit, because I think 31's a lot of fun. I mean, it's not what I would call high art, you know. I mean, it's a big slaughter movie, and there's really inappropriate characters in it, like little Nazi clowns who speak Spanish and stuff like that. But seeing Meg Foster like brandishing a chainsaw and going apeshit, yes, please, thank you. That's what I want.
I'm on board. I've been looking forward to it, you know, since he announced the Kickstarter campaign or whatever. I've been looking forward to it all year. After reading your review from Sundance and hearing about it, and I'm going to that. I think it's in like a week. Yeah, right? September 1st is that Fathom event where they're screening it for one night around the country.
And it's Fathom, so they probably have it on like Laserdisc or something.
Yeah, it's going to suck, but it may be the only way I get to see the movie, so.
Yeah, so you got to go for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a hell of a lot of fun, and I really hope that it does for Richard Brake what Devil's Rejects did for Bill Moseley. Because Richard Brake is fantastic in this, and he's kind of the main villain, and he's really, really disturbing.
I'm in.
Yes. We'll do for getting caught in weird murderous mazes on Halloween that Jaws did for the water, something
what
like that.
What the Shallows did for the water.
The Jaws water?
For the Jaws water. Jaws water is...
Jaws what, water.
What the Shallows was originally called. Is there like a smaller horror movie, something that people may have missed that you feel like you want to bring some attention to?
You know, one movie, actually, I didn't even get to write a review for it, and I don't know why. I might have just gotten behind on stuff and skipped it. But I think Baskin just recently came out.
It showed up on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet. I've tried twice and fallen asleep both times, but that's not the movie's fault at all. It's because I put it on at like 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. No, you need your full attention.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's very kind of like Clive Barker by the way of David Lynch kind of weird feeling. I don't know. It hit me out of nowhere. And I love that. Like, it's really depraved. And I just feel like it's a movie that if Clive Barker was watching it, he would be clapping his hands in glee throughout much of it. I guess that's the best way to put it. And I just haven't seen a lot of films that have sort of taken those kind of risks in a while. And I don't think it's a movie a lot of folks have talked about. I know everybody's talked to death about Clown, which I liked Clown a lot. But it wasn't the second coming for me as it was for many horror fans.
It's okay.
It's fun. I mean, I love the idea of it. I love that they kind of go there in terms of the violence and stuff, that they don't really shy away from anything.
Right.
I love the mythology of the clown itself. Peter Stormare being a total nut job. I mean, of course.
That's not good. So, that's redundant.
But yeah, I mean, it's a fine movie. It was fun, you know. I don't think I might watch it again. I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's sort of anything that people haven't flogged to death online. I mean, I know that's kind of everybody's
favorite thing. Yeah, I mean, right,
thing.
When it comes to horror, unfortunately, even the smallest movie ends up getting written about a lot, which is great. I mean, like,
it's the point of what we do.
Exactly, is to try to bring attention to smaller movies. Like, I mean, you're just plastering your name fucking all over Carnage Park, so obviously you want people to see that one.
Yes.
I need to rewatch it.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? And I don't know what the release details are for it. So I apologize because I don't know how quickly anybody will actually get to see this.
Apologies.
Yes. Thank you. Your forgiveness means everything to me.
I'm a fair guy.
That's what I appreciate about you.
My fairness.
But another movie that was just a total gut punch was The Eyes of My Mother. Have you had a chance to see that one yet?
I have not. I know of it, but have not seen it.
Yeah, I missed it at Sundance, and so I got a chance to catch up with it online for Fantasia. And holy shit, I don't even know how a movie can be that gorgeous and that just unsettling at the same time. Like, it's like has this, like, ability is sort of like, it has a soothing quality, but yet the whole time you're like, this is not right, yet you feel very safe while it's very unsafe. It's so interesting to me, and I loved the lead actress in it, and I'm totally blanking on her name, but she was just magnificent. And it's subtitled, so that might be a turnoff to some folks who don't have time for subtitles with their horror, you know, which I get it, I'm not in the mood for it sometimes, but if you're sort of a little on the artsy-fartsy side of horror, and that's, you know, the proper term for it, artsy-fartsy horror. Forget this elevated horror. We're gonna, you know, retire that nonsense. Artsy-fartsy horror. But no, Eyes of My Mother was really, really, it was up there with Under the Shadow for me this year, which is another one I think is coming out within a few months.
I think it's out in October, yeah. Is there anything besides, so you've mentioned 31 coming up, Don't Breathe, which is out this week, Under the Shadow, which I believe is out in October, like I said, is there anything you can think of festival-wise that, Eyes of My Mother, we're not sure if it's coming out, but anything that you know of that's coming like around the corner that you would recommend?
I'm trying to think. I feel like this whole year has been like a sort of hodgepodge. Like, I don't even know how it's already the end of August. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I've seen that is coming up. Huh. We've discussed.
It's hard too
so
when you
many.
See stuff at festivals. Like, you just lose a sense of not only when you saw it, but when or if it's ever coming out as well. You know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. You know, I mean, I feel like that might be it. A lot of stuff has already kind of come out. You know, stuff like Sunchoke, which I know you were a big fan of. I'm trying to think if there's, I don't really know what else excites me this year in terms of horror, even stuff I haven't seen. I'm trying to think what else is out there that we have to look
forward to. Did you see at South by Southwest, did you see I'm Not a Serial Killer?
You know, I have not. Yes, that is actually one that intrigues me, but I think we have somebody else taking it on just because my plate's a little bit full these days. But that is one that intrigues me because I've heard really mixed things about it. I heard some people who loved it. I heard some people thought it was like, eh, okay. And then I heard some people who really outright didn't like it. So I don't know what to think on that one. Not that I let what everybody else says, you know, do my thinking for me. But I'm not really sure how to gauge that one in particular.
I happen to know the person who reviewed it for Daily Dead pretty well. And
was that you?
Yes. And I think it's one of the best movies of the year. I think it's awesome.
Did you watch it at Bruce Campbell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because we had a review also.
Yeah, it was like a capsule review.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is originally why I was like, oh, I don't know if I should. And then I think Jonathan probably figured out that you were seeing it there. Did that review go up yet?
This is behind the scenes dumb shit. But I had checked with him and just said, like, hey, we have this capsule review. Do you want something longer? And that's, I believe, out this Friday also in limited release and on VOD. So you have Don't Breathe and I'm Not a Serial Killer both out in the same weekend. So,
ooh, fun.
It's a really, really good weekend if you're a horror movie fan.
Interesting. You know, I might make some time now. But yeah, I had gotten asked if I wanted a screener, and I was like, oh, I don't know. And then we had that, you know, review out of South By, and I was like, oh, well, I guess if we sort of covered it. But it's good that you covered it. I don't think we posted that yet, so I would imagine probably.
No, I just turned it in today. So
what you're saying is you're slacking because the festival has been over how many days now?
Listen, it did end the day before yesterday, and so I apologize. But I did try to get it in quickly because I saw the movie was coming out Friday. I thought I had a few weeks, but no, just a few days.
It's always fun when that happens.
Yeah, right. I liked it a lot, although sometimes when I love a movie, it doesn't always mean that you will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't always tend to agree. But you know what's funny? It's like I can kind of tell, like, if I'm watching something, generally if I think you'll like it or you won't, or that you might find some value in something. But I just kind of knowing from the people who have said that they've enjoyed it, I feel like I'm a Serial Killer is a pretty safe bet for me.
I sure hope that that you like it because it
was. We don't want to have an It Follows round two throwdown at the end of this year, do we?
it was one of my favorite movies that I saw this past weekend. You know, I saw a couple movies that I liked a lot. That was one of my favorites. So.
Does it do for serial killers what Jaws did for the ocean?
It does for serial killers what Jaws did for the shallows.
Okay, excellent.
It is savagely unpredictable. Savagely unpredictable.
Savage unpredictably?
Correct.
Yes, it's like we're asking a question.
What, last question, and then I will let you go, mostly because I have to throw my laptop through a window because I'm very frustrated with the sound issues. What is your, obviously at the end of the year, this will change because we still have a few more months and we're going to see stuff. And we'll all be publishing lists of our favorite horror movies. And you and I, hopefully will do a podcast talking about our favorite horror movies. But as of now, as of August 23rd, do you have a favorite for the year so far?
If we're just talking pure horror,
Sure.
Probably don't breathe.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of fringy stuff. Like, I wouldn't call Carnage Park pure horror because that's a little more, you know.
I guess it's pretty horror.
I mean, it's pretty horror. Yeah. Horror is such a subjective term.
Sure.
Yeah,
because there's not really any supernatural stuff in it, but it is very kind of influenced by Texas Chainsaw and Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes and those kinds of 70s kind of survival horror movies.
Actually, if you read my interview with Mickey, it was a little bit different influences for him. So you're wrong. Just joking. No, there was some Jack Hill stuff that he talked about. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but I've only done like 100 billion interviews since January, but I think it was a little broader than that. But you know, I mean, film is subjective. Everybody sort of sees things through their own lenses. It's totally okay. You know, but I think his influences were a little wider than that. I get those comparisons though. I wouldn't say you're wrong.
No. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm wrong either.
No. Why would you ever say you're wrong?
Well, not about this. I think those influences are, whatever. I mean,
but yeah, I mean, in terms of like sort of pure horror movies, I mean, I would have to say Don't Breathe is right up there.
It's a good one.
You know, The Witch is up there for me also. You know, I mean, Carnage Park, if I had to pick a top five, you know, I think those would all be very strong contenders. I mean, I'll be honest, like I was very surprised at how much I love The Conjuring 2.
Damn it.
I wasn't expecting that. And I also wasn't expecting to be as disappointed by Neon Demon as I was. And the fact that you enjoyed it as much as you did. So I read you wrong on that. So maybe I didn't know.
Well, listen, that, you know, part of me suspects that movie may be a one and done for me. I don't know. Like, I'm not dying to see it again. You know what I mean? Like, the experience of watching it one time in a theater on a huge screen turned up super loud. There was a lot of stuff that I liked about it, but I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait to revisit Neon Demon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those movies, like, if I really didn't like it, I wanted to like it. I mean, I was the perfect target for that movie, you know. And for me, it just didn't do anything new. And it's Refn, you know, at least try to surprise me a little bit. Like, oh, models are shallow. Oh, shocking. And terrible, you know, and women are terrible people. Shocking. You know, so I was,
I mean, I would argue that there's more going on in the movie than that, but also that the movie
I don't think there is. It's a pretty surface movie. It had some really cool chances to do some cool shit. Like, you have a cougar or a mountain lion show up and then it just literally goes absolutely nowhere. And you take something that cool and weird and take it nowhere. Like, I don't know. But you know, I mean, but it, with that being said, like it's a movie, if it's on cable, I might actually pop it on just for the fact that it's visually, it's gorgeous. It's, you know, in terms of visuals, it's probably one of my favorite movies in terms of how it looked. And I love the score. The soundtrack is amazing.
Yep.
So it's one of those, I could probably write to it. If I didn't actually have to like watch it, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that was, you know, that was actually my biggest surprise because I was so pumped for that movie, you know.
Yeah.
And it just made me sad.
Is there anything still that you know is on the way that you haven't seen that you're totally looking forward to?
I honestly, you know, I mean, we have new Resident Evil and Underworld movies to get.
Those will be out in like January, right?
Hey, never too soon to get excited for a new Resident Evil or Underworld movie. Let's be honest.
It's the last Resident Evil, yes.
Yes, and
until the reboot.
Well, I mean, if they do that, that's not going to be with Paul or Mila or Mia, however you say it. But it could very well be. I don't know if this is going to be the last Underworld or not either. I'm guessing it should be. You know, for as much as it is the Lord of the Rings of werewolf movies, you know, the Lord of the Rings had to end eventually. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still stand by it.
I'm so glad you do. Somebody should. You're a top critic. Who am I to argue with you?
Exactly. But yeah, it's never too early for me to start getting pumped over Resident Evil, though. I hope it's not in 3D. I really hope that we're sort of past
all this. I'm sure it will be.
I just want to be done with the 3D shit so I don't have to, like, wonder anymore if I go to a movie like, oh, did I buy a 3D ticket? And then I've actually been the idiot who asks for glasses when I actually don't even need glasses. Mm. So I'm way over 3D at this point.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of kind of most of what's coming out for the rest of the year. I haven't seen Morgan. And I think we have a new Ring movie to get all chompy at the bit about.
Yeah, I'm not particularly excited about that, but
I'm not particularly excited about either one of them. Morgan looks intriguing, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on how safe they play it. You know, I'm always up for some good conspiracy theory, sci-fi, weird monsters tucked away in a maximum security facility type horror.
popular subgenre?
Oh, come on. You know, we got the whole Stranger Things thing going on right now. So, you know, it's hot.
Yeah.
As we see, you know, it's hot in the industry. No. And actually, you know, I'm finally getting through Stranger Things. I think we have 3 episodes left.
I still have 3 or 4 left, I think.
I like it. But, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I like it,
I'm not ready to jerk off to it, I guess. That's cool,
yeah.
You know. I just haven't quite built up that kind of intimacy with it yet.
No, I'm just way into Barb. So, yeah, that's all it is.
Right, exactly. Barb is wonderful, actually. I really hope they find Barb. I don't know yet, so we'll find out.
Well, whatever. I don't want to turn this into, like, but why did Barb become the breakout? Like, I feel like Barb is... Like,
because the internet is so goofy that we will literally latch onto the weirdest, most obscure thing ever just to make it popular.
She was fine. It's nothing against the actress or anything like that, but I don't understand why, like, Barb became the thing about that show.
Yeah. You know, in a sci-fi movie, you know, with monsters and Matthew Modine being evil, like, it's Barb.
Right.
It's all about Barb. All about Barb. But yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's funny because everybody sort of says it's, you know, Stephen King, Spielberg and Carpenter all rolled into one. And to me, it just kind of feels like X-Files sort of done by way of like 80s Stephen King.
Sure.
Is more of the vibe I'm getting from it. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just, you know, it's good. It hasn't changed my life yet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It has increased my sex drive, though. So. And my hair does feel more luxurious, so maybe that's
it's working. It's
trade off.
It's doing its thing.
Woo! but yeah, I mean, it's fun. You know, it's that. You know what though? What I will say is, I love the fact that there actually is a TV show that people are so into that is sort of very pure in its intentions. It's, you know, it's not based on a property.
Right.
How refreshing is that?
Yeah.
In a day and age where every genre show is sort of based on something. That's popular. So, and I like seeing Winona Ryder get really good material.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, I'm not going to throw any snark its way because it doesn't deserve it.
No, I'm on board for all of it. I'm a little bit surprised because it does seem a show that's almost engineered to push my buttons, and it does, but I'm so aware that that's what it's doing.
You're just very aware of everything, Patrick.
I guess. I don't know. It's like...
You're self-aware.
It seems like something I should love, but I mostly just like it.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of self-aware, you saw Found Footage 3D.
I did.
And it was self-aware. You're very aware of your awareness.
I was aware of its self-awareness.
But how was it? I'm really curious about that one.
I thought it was super fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was really surprised by it because, I mean, obviously I don't want to say too much about it, but I didn't watch a trailer. I mostly just knew the title, and based on the title, I had an expectation of like, okay, this is going to be just a movie that is goofing on these two things. That's goofing on found footage and 3D almost in like a fucking like scary movie way, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not what it is at all. There's some of that, you know. It's certainly a movie that gets away with pointing out things that are stupid about found footage movies and 3D movies. But it's way smarter than that and way more kind of emotionally involving. Like, I did not expect to love all the characters and be interested in them more so than kind of the meta observations and all that shit, but I think it's the stuff with the characters that really works. I was super impressed by it.
Very aware.
I was aware
of its self-awareness. Of yeah. your awareness.
I was aware
of its self-awareness.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I hope it gets picked up soon and I hope it gets, you know, I don't anticipate it'll get a wide theatrical release just because there aren't really any marketable stars in it, you know, but I hope it gets at least a limited theatrical run so that people can see it in the theater, because I don't really like 3D, but the 3D was really impressive, and I would suggest that people see it in 3D.
Cool. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping maybe it pops up at like Scream Fest or maybe Fantastic Fest would be excellent. But yeah, I've been very curious about, you know, since the very early days of Scott Weinberg talking about it. So I've very much been looking forward to it. So it's awesome to hear it delivers.
Yeah, it was a really great surprise. All right, I'm going to wrap it up because my computer sucks and it's having all these mic problems. But I want you to hopefully come back on at least once before we do our best of show. So we'll have to pick maybe a movie or a topic to talk about. Maybe even in the comments of this episode, people can say, hey, I would love for you and Heather to talk about this thing. And now we're going to get a bunch of dumb fake suggestions. But if we get any real suggestions that are good, then maybe that's
Don't
what
let us
we'll
down,
do
Internet.
Next time.
Don't let us down.
The this Internet is your never lets me down.
You know, I mean, if all the comments happen to be from Heather Smixon and they say, you know, do a Point Break commentary, that would be really weird.
You just did a Point Break commentary.
Yeah, but it got all messed up and it didn't feel right. It didn't feel authentic in the end. So I was a little bummed. We had to fake. I won't say I had to fake a few things in the last 12 minutes, but some lines were fudged a little bit.
Got it.
You know, so it was a little bit of a bummer. It wasn't the ethereal experience I thought it would be.
Well, then maybe that's
or
what
maybe
we'll
we
do.
Save
we'll
it
see.
For another time. But yeah. You know, but if
that
it
might
happens,
be that I'd might be something we should do, like when we're in the room together. That might be more fun, like when you're here next summer or something like that. We'll see. I don't know, but it's always super fun to have you on and talk horror movies. Thanks for
yes, absolutely
for doing it.
It's you know. We always kind of bitch like, oh, horror's this or horror's that. But honestly, like the last few years have been so much fun. And if you can't, as a horror fan, understand the riches, the bounty of riches that we've had in the last few years in terms of horror, both, you know, we've got some really fun studio horror movies this year that Patrick's already written off without seeing, you know, but I would stand to say that like we've seen way more good theatrical horror than we've seen bad theatrical horror. And even the ones that are bad aren't really like atrocious. You know, so I feel like this is a really strong, another amazing year. And I just like the fact that, you know, maybe we'll actually see more theatrical horror in the summer from here on out. Cause I think two of the best performing original movies, like we were talking about original movies of this summer, were Lights Out and The Shallows.
Yeah, but, you know, budget to box office wise, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, you know.
And I really hope that that Don't Breathe is a hit. So everyone please go out to see it this weekend. If you're going to go see a different movie, like you for some reason haven't seen Suicide Squad and you for some reason insist on seeing Suicide Squad, do me a favor, just buy a ticket to Don't Breathe and then go see Suicide Squad garbage. But at least a good movie will get your money.
Yeah. I mean, if I was in a different position and I was, you know, wealthy, I would almost do that money back guarantee. Like if you go see, if you're a genuine horror fan and you see Don't Breathe and you don't like, at least have some fun with it. Like I would offer your money back, but realistically, like I couldn't afford to give my own money back on it. So don't quote me on that, everybody. But I truly mean that. Like, there's a lot of movies, like, you know, I can sort of say, yeah, it was good, it was fun. But I really feel like bang for your buck, like Don't Breathe is a hell of a time and a really fun audience movie.
And savagely unpredictable. If it's anything, it's savagely unpredictable. And guess what? I can quote you on that.
Indeed.
Anyway, thank you very much. As always, you can find more of our stuff at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter or email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Heather, where can people find more of your stuff?
They can find me over at dailydead.com. And sometimes I have some stuff over at thehorrorchick.com. And I'm on Twitter at The Horror Chick.
Yes, you are. Thank you very much for talking with me. It's always fun.
Thank you for having me. It was savagely unpredictable.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.